Well, joining us here on the line today is the, I should say, infamous Scott Tucker. This man is truly a genius at many levels, and there's much to be learned from him in all aspects of marketing. And we're going to talk about one sort of small fragment of the marketing process today, which he happens to be a specialist at. But I want to welcome you, Scott, introduce you to everyone. Scott Tucker, say hello.
Hello, Scott Tucker.
And he's a comedian as well. I should have plugged that in there. But, you know, Scott, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
No problem.
Scott is a I don't want to overstate myself here, so if I go too far, let me know, Scott. But
sure.
Sort of at this point, I would say internationally known marketing expert in your you started in the mortgage business, isn't that right?
Yeah, I sure did. I got in the business in 98.
And through I know that you mentored with some very very potent people, and invested your own money and time learning from some of the brightest minds in the business, and you sort of invented your own marketing empire here as a result.
That's and, right. I probably spent $250,000 at this point, plus the hours are obviously. Probably, you know, almost more important than the money spent. The amount of time it takes to create what I've created is so quite substantial.
Of course. Well, you know, Scott, the reason that we wanted to interview you here for the readers of the book is because, you know, there's a chapter about direct mail in the book, and then there's a section inside that chapter specifically about using tear sheet mailings as a direct mail marketing technique. And to my knowledge, you know, there's no better living example of a tear sheet specialist and expert than you. And so we wanted to interview you about that process, pick your brain a little bit. And, you know, I want to really kind of press you pretty hard here to get to really try and extract some valuable information about the process that the readers can use to benefit themselves and use it their own business. Does that sound fair?
Sure. I'd like to help everybody in whatever way possible.
Excellent. Well, to get started here, Scott, one of the first questions that I would like to ask, and Jim, as you think of things, jump in with me. And we've tried to sort of think of questions that might be in the reader's mind right now as they're listening to this. But the first thing that comes to my mind is a discussion, you know, hearing it from, you know, the expert himself here, a discussion about the virtues of using tear sheet mailing as part of a direct mail campaign. You know, why would you use tear sheets in the first place?
One of the first things that comes to mind is why you'd use a tear sheet mailing versus a regular sales letter is the sort of there's several factors. There's a sort of sneak up effect where, you know, it's what Gary Halbert called a pile mail, mm-hmm. where you've got a hand addressed envelope, no return address, and so it's a bit of a mystery who it's coming from. Real stamp on the envelope. I like weird stamps, and I like to use multiple stamps even when not necessary. Mm-hmm. So whatever the post office might require of you in postage, you use two or three stamps to get to that level of postage that's required for that mailing.
That's a
usually
good
tear sheet's a 1 ounce mailing. So, mm-hmm. And then beyond that, the tear sheet mailing has a couple of effects because inside the copy that works the best for a tear sheet is Jimmy or Travis, it would say on the post-it note, handwritten, of course, same person handwriting the post-it as handwritten the envelope. And you can have services do this for you, so you're not actually handwriting this yourself. They'll say, Jimmy, try this, it works, J, just the letter J. And the reason why it's the letter J is because that's the most common letter in the, you know, first names, that's what they tell us. But also in direct mail tests, that has been the most successful, probably because that's the most common first initial. So folks sometimes will think that it came from John at work or Jessica at church or Jared, their neighbor, or they'll rationalize themselves where it came from. And what's something a bit amusing, I guess, every so often people will call you and tell you that Jesus sent it to them, which is sort of an interesting way to rationalize where this came from. So
truly a godsend at that point. The relief of the
little manna from heaven.
That's a it's quite an endorsement. So they actually will rationalize where it came from and all that. So you'll have your mortgage borrowers in our case calling up saying, well, so-and-so from work, you know, I've had somebody call me before and say, you know, I've gotten this thing like every month for like 6 months. I mean, it's from my buddy at work. You know, he's ripping this out of the paper about you and keeps mailing it to me. I mean, he must really know how screwed up I am. I mean, I didn't think anybody could tell, but he must see, you know, that I'm worried. And I didn't want to go to the Cubs game with him. I couldn't afford to go. And maybe, you know, he must be catching on, or maybe because I'm packing my lunch or whatever. You know, they rationalize it all out where it came from and why. But
the sneak up effect is truly at work there when you got a guy calling in and saying, you know, my buddy's ripped this out six weeks in a row and keeps forwarding it to me.
Yeah, and they think it's so and so that works next to them, or they think it's somebody from church or their neighbor, and since we don't put addresses on it, I mean, it just really makes it really hard to figure out who sent it to them.
Now, Scott, you said something that was really, really important there, that you said that my friend sent it to me every month for 6 months in a row. So are you suggesting that you use these, like, and you're sending multiple pieces one after another, not just one time?
Right. My saying is till they die or refi.
They die or refi. We always say die or buy. I like that. It's well put.
Yeah, so you just keep after them. Really, you know, a lot of the time the money in the list is from the second or third or 87th mailing. It's not all from the first mailing.
That's a big tip.
And you want to have a big impact on the prospective borrowers. You don't want to have a small impact. So you don't just mail somebody one time and go away.
Uh-huh.
Really, when you've mailed them the first time, you've only softened the beachhead. You know, you get the immediate buyers, but there's a whole bunch more money sitting there in that list.
Now,
they look at this article, whether it's a newspaper tear sheet or a magazine tear sheet, whatever the case may be.
Uh-huh.
And now they think they've gotten it from a friend. So there's sort of the referral effect that has occurred. They think now that you've been written up by either the newspaper or magazine or whatever, so now there's sort of the social proof or credentializing effect where the paper says that you're the guy, mm-hmm. and people really are like cattle, most folks, and they, you know, herd animals, and they like to follow what the paper says is correct. They do, a lot of people do take the news as the truth, even though it's usually not, and so they'll take that endorsement from the newspaper there. And then they'll start to read in the thing, and it acts like a regular sales letter, you know, when they go to read the thing. But, you know, you'll have testimonials in the tear sheet, and you'll have multiple methods of response, like a pre-recorded message, a website to go see more testimonials or listen to more testimonials. The pre-recorded message could have more testimonials on it, could have different tips on the pre-recorded message. You can have a direct 1-800 number that goes to either you or to a call center transcriptionist. Or you could have and you should also have a local number, too, so they know you're local, you know, because people don't really realize that you're local sometimes. And you just have all these different response mechanisms, 100 different ways they can get a hold of you. We'll even include fax numbers. So, you know, sometimes you'll get a couple people a year that will fax you in a request for help. So it has just a couple, you know, it has a referral effect, a testimonial effect, and it has a sort of a social proof credentializing effect. So there's... It's just about the best thing you can mail to anybody is a tear sheet.
Yeah, well, you know, you really boiled it down to a very elemental level there. The benefits of this, I mean, it's easy to see why.
Let me say, too, it does what ordinary sales letters don't do so often. Number one, it gets delivered because it fools the mailman. Then it gets opened because it fools the recipient. Then it gets read because it fools the recipient. Then it gets acted upon because it's continued to fool the recipient.
Uh-huh.
Now I know that you guys have told folks that they need to put advertisement on the tear sheet, you know, like the FTC requires, and they do.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting about that is some of the people are still fooled, some of the people are no longer fooled, but the response is no different whether you have advertisement or on there or not. That in direct mail tests, it's been found that the same number of people respond either way. So,
you know, in our experience in testing, I'd have to agree, we've never noticed a difference.
Now,
right.
Do you guys think that that's because the person in general, people believe what they want to be true?
Yeah, they do. They do. It looks like a newspaper article. Why should I go scour it and look for a copyright symbol in the bottom right-hand corner? Why should I go look to see if it says advertisement?
Mm-hmm.
If we'll, you know, they just get lulled into, oh, this is a newspaper article,
mm-hmm.
and also because now that, you know, they've already had the post-it note telling them this thing works, and it's already mailed in a little, you know, invitation size envelope, looks like a letter from grandma. They just keep going along the path that is obvious to them, not the path that is the, you know, the more suspicious sort of conspiracy minded kind of thing.
Now, Scott, do you think that there's like a time when it's better to use tear sheets, maybe sometimes when you shouldn't use them?
I can't imagine a time when you shouldn't at all, and I would say it's almost always better to use a tear sheet mailing than a regular sales letter. Now, we will mix up regular mailings in the sequence, you know, but I ordinarily what we do in my program is my members will mail a newspaper tear sheet, then a magazine tear sheet, then, you know, maybe a week or so later, now comes a real sales letter.
Mm-hmm.
So we scoop up all the people, scoop up a lot of people with the newspaper tear sheet and the magazine tear sheet, and then we've also kind of built some sort of awareness of us. So usually we don't look for sort of brand building or any of that kind of image marketing in the kind of marketing that we do here in direct response marketing, but it is a pretty neat trick to mail a newspaper article about yourself, that, you know, get deals from that, and then mail a magazine article about yourself and get deals from that,
mm-hmm.
and then to mail a regular sales letter and already have the beachhead softened, so then when your regular sales letter shows up, it gets that much better response than if it had been mailed by itself or mailed first.
So in a campaign, in a series of marketing pieces that go out to the same group of people, would you, and that it's going to include a tear sheet, would you start with the tear sheet and then filter in the other type of pieces, or would you put a tear sheet, would it be prudent to put a tear sheet somewhere in the middle of the sequence?
I have my guys send a newspaper tear sheet first, then we do go to a magazine tear sheet, and those could be either flip-flopped either way. It doesn't really matter,
right?
You know, newspaper or magazine, which one's first. Then we go to the sales letter. But, yeah, I would rather we use the regular sales letter just because there are people who, for whatever reason, didn't respond to the tear sheet, and we don't know what that reason is. So we go ahead and scoop them up with a direct offer. Maybe they're more responsive to a direct offer or just a mailing that looks different. But I will say that in all my research, and I've talked to a whole lot of people that test tear sheets in all different media, I even, by the way, did a Miracler tear sheet for Dan Kennedy and Bill Glazer. So I've done stuff outside of the mortgage field as well with tear sheets. And everybody I've talked to that's tested tear sheets against other direct mail they have, they found that they get 2 to 3 times the return on investment with tear sheets that they get versus regular sales letters.
Well, you know, that's what I wanted to ask you, is if you'd found, like, any sort of measurement. So if someone's thinking about doing some direct mail and they're trying to decide which way they should go, if you'd found a measurement that says how much more effective a tear sheet could be than a letter or even a postcard.
Yeah, so that compared to regular sales letters, it's 2 to 3 times the money.
Wow.
Coming back off, you know, per dollar spent.
I mean, that's
say if you spend $1,000 on a regular sales letter mailing and you got back whatever multiple that you got back, well, you'd get 2 to 3 times that multiple with a tear sheet mailing. So that's why it's so important that folks have a tear sheet in their arsenal at least.
You know,
I mean, I think anybody who's listening to this needs to perk up their ears at that statement and pay close attention, because that's how powerful what we're discussing here with this tear sheet concept, which maybe just mentioned briefly in the book, it has such a powerful impact and can be such a strong marketing element to any campaign.
Well, you know, from listening in here, someone might think that this sounds complicated, that a tear sheet, you know, well, you know, I would just do a postcard because it's so much more simple. You know, there's no envelope, there's no postage, there's no, you know, I mean, there is, but, you know, there's no talk about multiple stamps and types of envelope and a post-it note and handwriting, and all of this can seem sort of complicated for somebody. But, I mean, as you mentioned, there are companies that can help you do this, so you don't have to worry about it doing it yourself. But if you were to boil down some elemental advice for someone who's thinking about this, what do you think that they should know before they get started? And, you know, what are some of the pitfalls? How could they go wrong and screw this up?
Well, let me say something about what you said about complication and so on. And it is complicated, but there are also different ways to have it done for you, whether you get it done for you through my program or some other vendor.
Right.
But things that are – businesses that are – you know, if it were so easy, we'd all be millionaires, you know, that your third-grade teacher would be independently wealthy and all the rest of it.
Uh-huh.
The things that are worth achieving are, at least at the beginning – you only create this tear sheet mailing once. After that, it's TikTok, and you have a letter shop do it for you.
Uh-huh.
But things that are worth achieving are complicated and seem difficult the first time you do them. After you've done it, you know, and you have folks have plenty of help on how to get these things done. They don't have to go it alone. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. All the instructions and know-how and all that stuff's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is plug into it. But you know, if it were so easy to make money, you know, all these simple postcard mailings that everybody else was making, we'd be making them all the money. But this is tremendous opportunity here, because while everybody else is mailing glossy four-color postcards that say, you know, lowest rate, no fees, and all this stuff, they aren't the ones making the money. The people making the money in direct mail and in every type of business, including the mortgage business, are the people who create something that's hard to knock off, and that are doing mailings that nobody else will do. And you asked me a question, and now I can't remember what the question was.
Oh, well, what do people need to know before they get started? You know, how can they go wrong? What are the pitfalls?
Oh, there's a lot of ways you could go wrong. You could use a return address. I mean, worse than that, you could actually use a return address label. even that, I mean, that's not even the worst way you could screw it up. You could actually not have it hand addressed or not have it. If you can't have it hand addressed.
Uh-huh.
The to addressee, the person that's going to.
Right.
The next best thing is to have it typewritten or make it look typewritten.
Uh-huh.
Directly
really
on the envelope?
The envelope. The hand addressing of the envelope to the addressee is really very important. If you can't do that, the next best is to have it typewritten or make it look typewritten. You could screw it up with using metered mail. There's a meter there, like a Pitney Bowes thing.
Yeah.
You could screw it up by using a pre-sort first-class stamp rather than a first-class stamp.
Uh-huh.
You could screw it up by not using multiple stamps to get to the postage that's required by the post office.
Uh-huh.
Inside the envelope, you could forget the post-it note altogether.
Uh-huh.
You could have the post-it note pre-printed by the printer rather than handwritten.
Right.
You could have it typewritten instead of, you know, you could actually have the post-it note typewritten.
Like, who typewrites on
it? Make it look typewritten instead of hand addressed, but who puts post-it notes in a typewriter?
Yeah.
And then
who's got a typewriter anyway?
Yeah, you could screw up. People have asked me before, well, you know, to get it printed on newsprint and all that's a little bit more complicated, can I just get it printed on regular paper like it was, you know? Well, yeah, you could have a photocopy of a newspaper, but do people really photocopy newspapers, or do they just tear it out and send it to you?
Yeah.
Then the other thing you could do is you could have all the edges of the newsprint, you could have it neatly cut by a printer with one of those razor knife deals that they run it through the press, and it's all looks like somebody cut it out of the newspaper using one of those big art class cutters that has the arm that comes down that makes a slice that's a mile long.
Yeah.
Well, you need to really have a tear along the side of the tear sheet, so you need to have the vendor actually do that correctly, and that's a difficult process. They use a sort of a serrated blade, sort of like a pizza cutter that has sort of a steak knife kind of serration to it. They use a serrated blade that tears through the paper to make it a teared effect, and it actually causes them increased maintenance and all the sort of stuff because they've got shredded paper all in their machinery. You could have the name of the publication be wrong for the audience. You could have the article written over the heads of the audience. You could have, it's almost impossible, by the way, to write this too simply. The
uh-huh.
average American has a seventh grade reading level. So Marge and Homer really is your target audience. It's not, you know, I don't even care if you're mailing to somebody who's a rocket scientist for NASA.
Mm-hmm.
The guy isn't all that highfalutin or fancy. He doesn't sit at home, you know, with his pocket protector on. He doesn't, you know, people have this image of, like, all my prospects are so smart. Well, no, most people really aren't all that smart, and even the people who are smart, they still, a friend of mine, Ed O'Keefe, who teaches marketing to dentistry, he says that, you know, no matter who the guy is, when he comes home at the end of the day, he just wants to watch the ball game and have a beer.
Uh-huh.
And people forget that all the time. They write their articles for their tear sheets way over the heads of their prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So it really needs to be a margin homer kind of, we're just regular folks kind of thing. And because you can test something hoity-toity against something, you know, plain and common speaking, and you'll see that the down-to-earth thing will outsell the hoity-toity thing every time. So there's just so many ways you can screw this up. You could have the look of the newspaper or magazine article not look like a newspaper or magazine. You could have the call to action all followed up. One of the most difficult things is to get the copy written correctly. So your copywriter, or if you're writing the copy yourself, the copy used for the tear sheet needs to be tested and tested against itself. So you need to have a control mailing piece that you use. But then you also need to always be trying to knock off the control as far as exceed the return on investment that your control mailing is getting.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do a lot of testing that away. So I know loan officers and mortgage brokers and mortgage bankers listening are now hopelessly depressed that they'll never get anything like this done because it sounds so complicated, and it is, but there are places and people to get it done for you. So, you know, don't go out back and shoot yourself. It's a very doable thing. It's not for the faint of heart if you're going to go and do it all yourself.
Right. You know, Scott, you said something a few minutes ago that really has stuck with me. You said that anything that's, you know, that's worth achieving is worth, you know, may be a little complicated. It's worth working for. That if it's, you know, if it's worth having, then you're going to have to work to get it. And so are you telling me that all this get rich quick and fast and easy stuff is it's not true? Let's get rich in real estate overnight.
Oh, I'm not saying that getting rich quickly isn't true. I'm saying that people seem to think that everything should be easy, and they get so easily discouraged nowadays when they can't click a mouse button and have 187,000 British pounds, you know, sent to their offshore account tax free, then they get all disillusioned and say, "Oh my God, this is too hard."
I gotcha.
That's what I mean. People just take it. You know, my grandpa grew up in the Depression, and he tells me about, you know, working when he's 12 years old, loading trailers, and, you know, sleeping. He had a house. They lived in a house with no insulation, and he'd wake up and there'd be snow on his blanket and this sort of thing. And I mean, you know, we've all heard the stories about walking uphill both ways, but these are actually real stories, you know, that are, you know, like factual. Like this, no, listen, Sonny, this actually happened. And you know, we forget how good we've got it. And I was talking to a friend today whose girlfriend's out of work. And I said, okay, so is your girlfriend out looking for work today? And he goes, well, she's having trouble finding work. And I'm like, listen, man, it's like a 5% unemployment rate. And this is Chicago. She can't find work in Chicago. There's like 3 million people in the city limits. And if you look at the whole suburbs, including the city, put it all together, there's 8 million people here. She can't find a job in the middle of 8 million people. 5% unemployment rate, I mean, this isn't Jimmy Carter. And so that's what I mean, is people just think it ought to be so easily done, and it's not that hard.
Uh-huh.
Because the reason it's not that hard is because nobody else is trying. So don't think this is something you can't accomplish. It really is, and it's worth accomplishing.
Now, Scott, what other industries have you seen this sort of mailing technique, this tear sheet mailing technique used?
Just about any industry you can name, it's used in all sorts of things, like what we call glop, or stuff that goes down the sink. So we, you know, ingestibles like vitamins,
uh-huh.
Other forms of glop, like stuff that, you know, beauty products.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you go into, you can go just about any industry, you'll find it used in dentistry. General dentistry, cosmetic dentistry, periodontics. You'll have it used in chiropractic. You'll have it used in pest control. You can use it it's used in the restaurant industry,
mm-hmm.
Mortgage industry, as we know, insurance. There's so many I can't even possibly think of them all. I mean,
used in the legal field?
In the legal field, yes, you can use it there as well. I mean, we all know with a lot of the public records that are legal, the legal records that are publicly available through the courthouse or through, you know, immediate filings. Let's say, I know there's a thing like chiropractors sometimes mail too, that is they get accident reports and they immediately mail, you know, the ambulance chaser guys,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The personal injury attorneys, they actually FedEx to accident report people. So they, like, somebody got rear-ended,
mm-hmm.
The next day, you know, hey, does your neck hurt? You know, and this thing shows up.
Right.
You could use it to that list.
Right.
In accountancy for, you know, CPAs and so on. You can use it for your bank could use it on you, like, hey, you know, this bank's terrific, does your bank suck, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could use it for to sell hearing aids, as I said. You can use it for legal services, like you said, martial arts schools.
Not much of a limit.
Moving companies.
Okay.
You could use it for, you know, if you could get the right list, plumbers could use it.
Yeah.
You could, I said the restaurant industry already. Just about anything you can get a mailing list for.
If you're considering doing the tear sheet, I think we could say, if you're considering doing the tear sheet and Scott hasn't mentioned your industry, just send us a note. I'll get him back on the phone and he can say your industry. Just put it back into the list.
Edit it right into the recording.
So it's pretty much universal, I think. is the key here. And I want to make a point because, you know, we had talked about when we were discussing the virtues and the benefits of this, we were kind of talking about how people fall under the illusion that this is being sent by their friends. And I think some people would might get offended at the concept of trying, you know, being trying to dupe people on purpose to get them to read a marketing message, and that may not be the kind of thing that they want to engage in. So you have something to say to those people that might feel that way?
Well, if you feel that way, then you really shouldn't be in the business of being in business, and you shouldn't be in the sales profession at all. I mean, say if we're going to talk about, I'll talk to the mortgage people because that's who's listening to the call, but it could apply to any business. If you've got a list of people that need your service, so if you got a list of people that need FHA streamline refinances, or if you've got a list of people that need to get out of their loan before it adjusts, like they got a 3-1 option ARM, or if you've got a list of people that have subprime mortgages or whatever it is you have a list of or can get a list of, if you're at all leery about putting a tear sheet mailing in front of somebody that needs your help, because they do need your help, whether they know it or not right now, you know they need your help. That's why they're on your list. If you're at all squeamish about that, then you ought to, you know, go work for a nonprofit foundation or something, because this isn't the business for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason at all to feel at all guilty about marketing to somebody who needs your help. In fact, I would say it's your responsibility, if you're going to be in this business, to reach the people who need your help, not to sit around in your office talking about doom and gloom and how bad the market is. It's really your job to reach.
That is an outstanding point, Scott. I mean, it's something we talk about, we call it the gift shift, and, you know, just understanding that what you provide really is a gift to people, so it's your responsibility to put it into the hands of as many people as possible.
Exactly. I mean, this is the profession you've chosen, and so you ought to be helping as many people as you can, you know, time-wise and financially possible for you to help. You ought to be helping as many people as possible.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's good advice. Scott, while we have you on the line, would you mind spending a few minutes telling us about the program that you have for people in the mortgage industry?
Sure. I've got a area-exclusive program for loan officers and mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers. And what I mean by area-exclusive is there's just one person in each geographic area throughout the U.S. and Canada. We've got over 100 areas taken already. There's probably a maximum of around 200 areas possible. You know, I've got folks in Canada, like I said, like Toronto and Halifax, and I've got them in the U.S., too many places to name.
Mm-hmm.
What's exciting is it works. My system works in areas that you would think it wouldn't work. It works in places like Omaha and other out-of-the-way places. It works in big cities, small towns, Knoxville, Tennessee, and on and on. So what I've done is I've created this area-exclusive coaching program that has bundled with it my area-exclusive marketing system for FHA and subprime, and it also gets you deals that aren't FHA or subprime. So it's a way to get deals that can be done a multitude of ways. And coupled with that also is a mastermind group. So in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, he spoke about the mastermind principle being so important to people like Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Andrew Carnegie, leaders in business at the time the book was written. And so the mastermind principle, what's so interesting about that is, say we have an online forum for my members only that's password protected and all that, and they can go on there and ask each other questions, and I'll actually speak up and help them with their questions as well. But we find that, you know, with over 100 members, that somebody posts a question, and, you know, they go to bed confused, frustrated, or whatever, and they wake up with the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole multitude of services that are bundled into this coaching program. And so if folks are interested in that, they should see my website, which is mortgagemarketinggenius.com, and see if there are areas available and so on. They can see testimonials from members as well. They can see if there are areas available, and they can go ahead and apply for membership there.
Hey, Scott, I want to ask you, because I know the answer to this question, and I think the listeners need to know. In terms of your program, someone is in an area that may be already taken. They can, if aside from licensing issues, they can work your program from a distance and work in areas that may not necessarily be, you know, outside their doorstep.
Yeah, folks will oftentimes say, like if they're in Chicago, for instance, just to name a city, that they would say, well, I want this exact, you know, I want right where my office is. Well, how about if you market to the area next to where your office is because your area is already taken? So instead of marketing, say, the north side of the city and the north suburbs? Would you instead like to mail the northwest part of the city and the northwest suburbs, you know, just right next door? And so that's a solution. Also, we've had folks say, well, I live here and everybody around me, six ways from Sunday, I got all these areas taken all around me. I'm surrounded by Tucker guys. But I grew up one or two states away, and I know everybody back there. I've only lived where I live now for 5 years. Could I market for loans where I used to live and maybe 3-4 days a week go back, you know, fly or drive back there, do all my applications and closings in that 1 week, and then spend all the rest of my time where I live now? And people have done that as well. Mm-hmm. So it works either which way, and you can do a majority of it with through distance. But I do recommend for the maximum fees possible and all that, and to really create a personal relationship with your borrowers, that you do spend probably about 3 days a month where your marketing area is. So you just have an office that you use for those 3 days of the month. And there's companies like Regis and I can't remember the name of the other company, but these virtual office companies.
Right.
You can just have an office for X amount of hours per month, and you have a mailing address and all this sort of thing. So people really think you're there all the time, but you're not.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. So, I mean, really, I mean, if you are in the industry and it's something you're interested in, it's worth checking out, because even if there's some conflicting issues right in your neighborhood, there might be some availability nearby. So,
And also something else that comes to mind is people are frequently telling me, well, my area is really in tough times right now.
Yeah.
You know, where they live currently. And I say, well, if you don't like your area, you can do one of two things. You can move to an area that isn't in tough times, or you can just simply procure that area from me and market there without moving. So
right.
That's even easier,
yeah.
I think, for most people. So, you know, there's always some market in the United States that's doing very well. I know right now Seattle is doing extremely well with continued depreciation, even in the liquidity thing and the credit crunch. Seattle continues to perform very well.
Right. And so your website again, Scott, was mortgagemarketinggenius.com, correct?
Yes, it's a very humble URL that I slotted.
Yeah, I could tell.
Fitting name, though. I'll give you that.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Scott, I can't thank you enough for being willing to spend this time with us right here, share this information, valuable advice for the readers of the book to impart your knowledge and wisdom to them and to us. We appreciate it very much.
I'm very glad to help, and I'm flattered at your invitation to be included in the book as well.
Excellent. Well, Scott, I look forward to talking to you again soon, and make sure that we stay in touch.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much, guys.